content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Chris Canangler from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Kids Sports Illustrated magazine. Really interesting stuff. A lot of cool things to tell you about. Can't wait to get started. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation, and they can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. And you're going to hear some paper turning because we're actually reading from, hear it, there's the page, from the actual magazine. Let's get going. This first article is under the heading Warm-Up. And very appropriate now for this time of year. It says, the headline, give me a year of Octobers. What is he talking about? Summer is a dismal time of year. The days are too long and the sports schedule is too lean. Sure, MLB, WNBA, MLS, and NWSL are doing their best to keep me on life support, but can't we all agree it's just not enough? Now, I can already hear someone from the back of the room saying, well, what about golf or tennis? To which I would nod in agreement, sure. But a tournament here and there doesn't exactly fill up my sports calendar. I'm thirsty for more than water here, people. I need action, which is why it feels so good to get to October, a month where the empty squares on the calendar fill up with higher stakes and hotter takes, and the world of sports wakes up. And in fact, October, he said, turning the page, is the best month of the year by far. MLB's wild card series begins right as the month kicks off, and the World Series starts just a few weeks later. Will our July-August cover star, Tariq Skubal, make it to the big game with the Tigers, or will Otani and the Dodgers round the bases for another World Series run? Either way, I'm giddy over finding out. Soccer starts to wrap up season play, which means high-stakes games, and, in another great move by the month, the WNBA Finals also air with a best-of-seven series for the first time. Will the Liberty do it again? What about the Lynx? It's a month so good, it completely makes up for August. Now we're talking. And did you know the best day in sports, possibly the best day ever, happens in October? A sports sigi, sometimes called the sports equinox, a day when all four major sports align in the stars and on our calendars to fall on one perfect day. This year, it occurs on October 27th. Put that down on your calendar because it marks the single best day of the year by far, October 27th. So mark your calendar, kids, because here's what's going to be going down. It'll be Game 3 of the World Series. The Chiefs and the Commanders play on Monday Night Football. The Oklahoma City Thunder will take on Dallas Mavericks, but that's only one of 11 NBA games on the air. Even regular season NHL will be on with two games to choose from. Sports bliss. The hot takes will practically write themselves, which makes me wonder why this doesn't happen more often. A day when you can watch all of your favorite sports. Forget once a year. It should happen all the time. In fact, why do sports ever take a season off? Well, I'm good with a long weekend or an all-star break here and there, but the Treehouse Gang doesn't get a break from putting the magazine together, so why should players ever stop? And they should go year-round. The sports equinox sigi would turn into a sports super orbit. A sporting schedule when there was never a dull moment and everything was accessible all the time and kids never found themselves bored ever again. Throw the baseball games inside if you have to because there's no downside to all sports all the time. A year full of sportstobers with countless games to enjoy after school. Wait, now listen. This hot take may have gotten a little hot on me. A month of Octobers might be great on the sports-watching front, but we certainly don't need to attend school all year. We're just kids, after all. We're just a bunch of kids who really want to watch sports and who already attend plenty of school. Actually, forget the super sports orbit. We're fine with an equinox because a year of math class and spelling tests and homework with no summer break is far worse than August being a little lean on sports. You know what? Forget I said anything. But kids, please, don't forget to mark your calendars for one very important date, the 2025 Sports Sigi on October 27th. It's going to be a really good day. and it only happens once a year. Here's a little article about girl power. Totally based call. Jen Powell, you know who she was or is? She made history on August 9th when she became the first woman to umpire a regular season MLB game. The historic first-timer debuted to a standing ovation at Truist Park in Atlanta, where she umpired first base during Game 1 of the Braves-Marlins doubleheader. During Game 2, she made calls at third base, and in a perfect end to the series, she umpired at home plate the following day. Powell got her start calling softball games 30 years and approximately 1,200 games ago. A three-time all-conference catcher for Hofstra, she spent 7 years umpiring NCAA softball games until 2016, when she was approached by MLB umpire Ted Barrett and invited to camp. She spent 10 seasons as an ump in the minors, starting at the rookie-level Gulf Coast League and working her way up to AAA, where she became the first woman to call the championship game. It's been a memorable run. In 2024, she was also the first female umpire in 18 years to call an MLB spring training game. You might say she is out of this world and safely anchored in the history books. Either way, Powell is a home run for MLB. So, assuming you're a football lover, let me ask you this question. What if there was no football? This is an article by Mark Bechtel. And he says, August 2nd was a big day for Antonio Gates. The former Chargers tight end was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was presented with a traditional gold jacket, and his bust was enshrined in the building known for the giant football rising out of its roof. But without the help of a politician 120 years ago, Gates might have chased stardom in another sport, and the famed structure in Canton, Ohio would have had a totally different look. Back in the early 1900s, football was in trouble. Played almost exclusively at the college level, the sport was so violent that several of the country's top university officials threatened to ban it. Public opinion largely supported such a move. One newspaper noted, "The question is, how long will these terrible affairs be allowed to continue?" The answer? Well, so far at least, it's been forever. Football is thriving. It's easily the most popular sport, college and pro, in the United States. It has become a year-round phenomenon. More people on average watch the NFL draft on TV than the World Series or the NBA Finals, if you can believe it. And for that, players, owners, and fans can all thank one man. Guess who? Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy was a tough guy. He was once shot in the chest while giving a speech, but continued because the bullet was slowed down by a packet of papers in his jacket pocket. He enjoyed football and thought it built character in the young men who played it. And in 1905, he happened to be president of the United States. That October, he summoned coaches and officials from Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, three of the top programs in the nation at the time, to the White House. In the months that followed, new rules were put into place to make the game safer, including legalization of the forward pass, which placed less of an emphasis on overly physical ground games. But what if Teddy had never intervened? That's right. What if we lived in a world without football? Well, for starters, we probably have football. It would just be that other kind, the one that people actually play with their feet. What we know now as soccer has something baseball, basketball, and hockey don't, a schedule that largely revolves around weekend games. And that's one of the main appeals of football. It gives fans a chance to rally as a community on a day when most of them aren't working. Those folks in Green Bay are going to find a place to get together and wear their cheese heads. Maybe it'd be at an art museum or something. Maybe not. More likely, it'd be at a soccer game. What about the players, though? Some of them would simply play other sports. Gates was an excellent basketball player at Kent State, so good, in fact, that he didn't even play football in college so he could focus on hoops. It wouldn't be hard to see him in the NBA doing battle with fellow NCAA basketball stars turned NFL Hall of Famers Tony Gonzalez and Julius Peppers. There are plenty of NFL stars who could make a living in a different sport. quarterbacks Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff were raised by dads who played baseball professionally, it's easy to picture both of them as major leaguers. Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray was picked in the first round of the MLB draft when he was in college. Had football not been an option, he'd likely be starring for the Athletics right now, giving the team, which is currently without a permanent home, a much-needed face to the franchise to build around. Those potential other sports stars have one thing in common. They're kind of average-sized, at least by athlete standards. But what about the guys who thrive in the trenches of football games, the guys who protect Murray, like Arizona offensive lineman Paris Johnson Jr.? He's 6'6 and 325 pounds, not exactly the ideal size for baseball. As a journalism major at Ohio State, he graduated in 3 years. He'd more likely to contribute to a growing trend of giant guys wedged into small cubicles. And consider Von Miller. Without football, the Commanders linebacker would have to fall back on his degree from Texas A&M, where he majored in poultry science. If the 8-time Pro Bowler were to bring the same expertise to chicken as he's brought to football, there's no telling what advances would be made in chicken nuggets by now. So maybe this whole no football, maybe it's not so bad after all. And what if you don't even like football? Oh, wow. Would you notice a difference in the world without it? In a word, yes. If there's one person who's impossible to avoid, it's Taylor Swift. Her life would be different, and so would yours if you ever read things on the internet. Do we think she'd have met Travis Kelce if he wasn't a football star? She'd more likely be with her old boyfriend, Joe Alwyn, and her album, The Tortured Poets Department, would be missing some of its best songs like The Alchemy and So High School, which seemed to be about Kelce. So how do we avoid this fate, this sad upside-down Swift verse where our Sundays are spent? What, talking to our families? We hope that the collective brain power in the NFL and college ranks, and there's plenty, including Kelce and his recent interdisciplinary studies degree from Cincinnati, is enough to figure out a way to go back in time and save the game and pop stars we love so much. Well, let's go now to a new article called Game Changers, and here are some really fascinating short little pieces about some of these athletes who you will probably recognize and how they forced the rules to change. It's called Game Changers. The rule book rules all but some athletes are so good or so unique they forced the game to change. Here are six instances when players overruled. MLB rules were changed to contend with pitcher Pat Venditti's ability to pitch with both arms. Isn't that amazing? The Venditti rule was implemented in 2008 and states that a pitcher must visually indicate which arm he will use for the entire at-bat. Fun fact, Venditti pitched with a special six-fingered glove, allowing him to quickly switch pitching arms after he visually indicated which arm he would use, of course. You've heard of Hack-a-Shaq? Shaquille O'Neal was a beast in the paint, but dismal at the free throw line, and his opponents were quick to take advantage of that. Dallas Mavericks coach Don Nelson is credited with coming up with a strategy coined Hack-a-Shaq, referring to an away-from-the-ball foul that sends poor free-throw shooters to the line. The move prevailed until 2016 when the NBA shifted its rules to discourage off-ball fouling in the last 2 minutes of a game. Add more Woods. Tiger Woods was once a dominating force on the course, so much so that before the 2002 Masters, Chairman Hootie Johnson approved changes to Tiger Proof Augusta. To make the course more difficult, holes were lengthened and the fairways changed to include more trees, all because of Tiger Woods. The trapezoidal area behind the goal limits the space a goalie can handle the puck. It was introduced before the 2005-2006 season by the NHL to contend with players like Brodauer of the New Jersey Devils, who were known for their awesome puck-handling skills. Hold your horses. Dallas Cowboys safety Roy Williams had a great method for taking down opponents. Just grab them by the collar and force them to the ground. He was so formidable and dangerous with this strategy, the NFL introduced a rule in 2005 making horse collar tackling illegal. And finally, let her rip. Cleveland Browns running back Greg Pruitt famously wore tearaway jerseys because it made him more difficult to tackle. The NFL banned the use of tearaway fabric in 1979 to even the playing field and also save on, you know, replacement jerseys. Okay. Here's a really interesting article now from SIKids.com on page 23, and it's titled, "So What's It All For?" This is really interesting. Listen, help. At a press conference before the British Open in July, Scottie Scheffler was asked how he feels after a big win or a big loss. Stopping to think for a moment, the top-ranked player on the PGA Tour went deep. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life, and then they make it to number one in the world, and it's like, what's the point? Because, you know, what is the point? He got us thinking. Aren't sports, in the end, just made-up games? If so, why do we obsess over them? Why do people train their entire lives to be at Scheffler's level, and why do people break their TVs when Jaylen Brown misses a corner three? I love putting in the work. I love getting to practice, said Scheffler. But at the end of the day, sometimes I just don't understand the point. I don't know if I'm making any sense or not. Well, with the help of South Florida sports psychologist Dr. John Murray, we'll try to make some sense of it with you, Scotty. Listen up. The exercise. Your bod will thank you. It's time to move. Sports are just good for you. Exercising provides you with immediate benefits as well as long-term benefits. It's good for your bones. It's good for your brain. There isn't a part of your body that it doesn't help. And perhaps the best and most fun way to get a good sweat on is by participating in sports. The Centers for Disease Control reports that thinking and cognition improve immediately after physical activity. Exercising also helps to reduce stress and anxiety. Your heart, lungs, bones, and muscles all benefit, increasing your chances of a longer, healthier life. That's right. Even 10 minutes of activity a day can impact how long a person will live. And if you possibly need another reason that exercise should be on the menu, it is proven to put you in a better mood. So what are you waiting for? Get moving and playing. Although a life spent in bed eating waffles and playing Donkey Kong Bonanza every day on an infinite loop might sound awesome, the strongest feelings of happiness come from overcoming struggle. In order to feel the highest highs, you need to have some skin in the game. There's always the element of pursuit, says Murray. Seeking to be a stronger person, a better person than you were before, sports are a microcosm for life. The rush. Have you heard of dopamine? Well, let me tell you what it is. If you've ever watched a game and wondered why your feelings were so intense, turns out that being a fan affects your brain. There's a phenomenon called mirroring, in which neurons allow you to feel like you're actually part of the team you're watching. And if your squad comes out on top, your brain is likely to release a neurotransmitter called dopamine that gives you a sense of pleasure. On the flip side, a loss can lead to a release of hormones that bum you out. So don't listen when people criticize you for saying we when talking about your favorite pro team. You're all in this together. And then there's the community. Shared lingo, group dynamics, and a feeling of belonging. Don't forget fun with friends. Sports is all about community. The people you play with, the people you watch with, and the experiences you share. There's something special about coming together because you love a game. Murray says we live in a culture that is highly focused on sports, but that's not a bad thing. He also points out that an interest in sports shows an investment is a foundational element within your community. Wanting to excel in something or be something that is valuable to your culture is very significant, he says. It's also just kind of awesome. Awesome. Being on a team, or awesome even being a fan, means sharing the highs and lows of the season. It means coming together over a tough schedule or a difficult loss or enjoying the thrill of a last-minute goal with thousands of screaming fans in the stadium around you or the wacky uncle in your living room. To put it simply, it fosters a sense of belonging. Murray believes that being part of a sports community also enhances performance. The social benefits, encouragement, and increased focus to not let your team down can have a big effect. At the same time, and less often, it can sometimes detract from performance due to anxiety and pressure to perform. Sure, not everyone can be an elite athlete, but anyone can take an interest in a team and have tons of fun doing so. Well, I sure hope you're enjoying all of this so far. I'm going to turn now to an article basically talking about a rising star. Again, in football, it is October after all. Arch Manning, and what a storied family he comes from. His recognizable last name has put plenty of attention and expectations onto the sophomore, but the Heisman favorite just wants to play ball. When he was around 6 years old, maybe you're close to that age, a boy named Arch knew what he wanted his future to look like. "I really want to be a good football player," he told his family on a car ride, "but I don't want to be famous." His younger brother, Hyde, offered a solution. "Just keep your helmet on all the time." If only it were that easy. Arch is taking over as the starting quarterback at the University of Texas. That alone would mean the eyes of the college football world would be on him. But his last name is Manning, the same as his uncles, Peyton and Eli, as well as his grandfather, Hall of Fame quarterback Archie Manning. That means as long as Arch was playing football, there was going to be a spotlight shining on him, whether he wanted it or not, and he never did. When college coaches began to focus on Arch as he entered Isidore Newman High in New Orleans, his family sent word, "Whatever you do, do not offer this kid a scholarship yet." When dozens of offers eventually came, Arch had to be coaxed into taking official visits. When he was invited to the annual Elite 11 quarterback competition, he turned it down. It wasn't because his parents were protecting him from the spotlight. Really, it was Arch didn't want to go to Elite 11 because his last name is Manning. People tend to assume that his famous uncles had a huge influence on him. But as Arch was growing up, they were living far away, playing in the NFL. His dad, Cooper, jokes that based on the public perception, he and his wife Ellen must have been in Sri Lanka while Peyton and Eli raised him. The reality, Cooper says, is that Eli has never seen Arch play a game in person for the simple reason that he lives 1,300 miles away and has four children of his own. Family matters. Cooper, who is Peyton and Eli's older brother, was set to play wide receiver at Ole Miss until a rare medical condition ended his career. But it was not passed on to Arch, so he was free to try anything. When he was a kid, his parents had him play soccer, baseball, golf, tennis, and basketball. They put him in a swimming pool. They had him try pottery. They even wanted him to play a musical instrument. They learned that his preferred instrument was a football. His famous swimming stroke was football. And he thought crafting a football out of clay was a good use of his pottery skills. Cooper and Ellen wanted Arch and Hyde and their daughter May to understand that just because they had a famous name didn't make them better than anyone else. Arch has never woken up on Christmas morning in the same city as Peyton or Eli, but he did share a house for extended periods with high school teammates who needed a place to stay. Arch never thought that simply being a Manning made him different. Even became a top recruit in high school, Arch would prefer never to be in the paper or take a picture or do a commercial or do anything that would require attention on him. He had no interest in it. Of course, it's hard to turn your back on the money to be made from the name, image, and likeness deals college athletes can now make. So Arch has signed plenty of deals with sponsors that make him visible. He has done a masterful job of recognizing the undue hype without succumbing to it. This spring, when he was asked about playing behind Longhorns quarterback Quinn Ewers, who's now with the Dolphins, Arch said, "It's probably pretty annoying having me as the backup, just with all the media stuff, but he handled it like a champ." Arch also handled the situation well on the field. where he threw just 95 passes in his first two seasons as Ewers led the Longhorns to back-to-back college football playoff appearances. "I played every year in high school," Art said. "Freshman year at Texas was tough because I didn't deserve to play. But I was not used to not playing. I would always go in former defensive coordinator Paul Chryst's office, and it was like an hour of watching film and an hour of me venting. So I'm always grateful for him. I still keep in touch with him. He's a great guy. He was like, stay patient, man. Just keep working." That's something Arch has always done. Plenty of kids of his generation consume sports in short bursts on YouTube or social media. But every weekend, Arch watched at least two full NFL games because he wanted to see his uncles play. He would sit there with his sweatbands on, Cooper says. During commercial breaks, Arch would fire passes to his mom or dad in the entryway of their home. Watching Peyton and Eli play full games and full seasons prepared Arch for the ebb and flows of playing quarterback in a way that highlights of a stranger never could. Now, even with his limited experience, he is the starter for a team projected to compete for a national championship, and he's the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, something neither of his uncles nor his grandfather ever did. Around the country this fall, football fans will watch Arch to see if he has Peyton's head, Eli's cool, or Archie's toughness, or some combination of all three. What he got, his mother says, was the obsession. Okay, we're getting kind of towards the end of the program, so let's finish up with some kind of fun things here. These are some questions that see if you can get the right answer. This first one's about baseball. So what's the call? Here it is. Let me set it up. Buzz's Bandits are playing Penny's Panthers in a baseball game at the Treehouse. While on third base, Buzz has a brilliant idea. You know, if he were on second, he could peer in and steal the signs that catcher Penny is flashing to pitcher Whitney, and then relay the information to Kip, who is batting. So as Whitney delivers a pitch, Buzz takes off backward from third to second. He makes it easily. The question is that legal? No. It's not. Buzz is out. According to MLB rule, a runner is out if he runs the bases in reverse order to confuse the defense or make a travesty of the game. So, no, he's out. Ever. Let's see. Let's try this one. Buzzer Bouncer. The Victory Violets are down by one to the Electric Eagles with just a few seconds left on the clock in a game played under WNBA rules. Violets guard Vanessa Vick heaves a desperation shot toward the Eagles' goal. It falls well short of the basket, but it bounces off the court and through the hoop as the buzzer sounds. The crowd goes wild. Does it count? Whoa, stop that. It does actually not count. Is no good. Players are not allowed to volley the ball directly out of the air when they are in the kitchen. All right, we're getting pretty close to the end here. So let me just tell you that. Get the music going here. Where is the music? There it is. Let's start the music on the way out. This is my first time doing this, guys. Oh. Hello. We've run out of time for today's episode. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you'd enjoy it. I'm Chris Canangla, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print.